out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big pecker. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have a special show with three guests instead of just one. We're bringing back Ed Connors, the former owner of Gold's Gym. Ed, in our last interview a couple of weeks ago, he told me how he used to have three houses in California where he would have guests. So anybody he thought had potential for bodybuilding, he would invite them out to California and they could stay at his house for free while they were maybe looking for a place to live out there for themselves, or maybe trying to get an interview with Joe Weider or a contract with Joe Weider or do some photo shoots or whatever they're trying to do. So Ed, at the end of our interview, suggested that we bring back a couple of his guests. So that's what we're doing today. We're bringing back Jay Cutler, four-time Mr. Olympia. And Jay went out to California when he was only, I think, 19 years old or 20 years old. Ed saw the potential in him right away. So he invited him out several times before Jay actually moved out to California in 99. And he also did the same thing with Rich Gaspari, our other guest. And Rich competed at 20 years old in the 83 NPC Nationals, which Bob Paris won. And Ed saw the potential in him, and he invited him out to live in California and manage one of his gyms. So we've got all three of those guys on the show today. We've got Ed Connors, of course, and then we've got Jay Cutler, who is appearing on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast for the first time. And Rich Gaspari is also going to join us. So we're going to talk to all three of those gentlemen in a second. Before we get to that, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. Do you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential? Then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that website is flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll also give you 20% off your first order. All right, and we did get a few emails. I did have some more bad news. It seems like every week we have a passing away of somebody, but I was talking to Boyer Coe yesterday, four-time Mr. Universe Boyer Coe, legend in the bodybuilding world, of course, one of the gentlemen of the sport, one of my favorite interviews. I'm trying to get Boyer on the show again because we haven't talked to him in a few years, and I'm trying to do a call with another person, so I'm trying to get Roy Callender to come on with Boyer. So hopefully we can do that next week. We're still planning on that. And Boyer told me that Dan Howard passed away. And Dan, for those of you in the know, he used to work with Joe Gold. And I think Dan used to design a lot of equipment. And Boyer told me that Dan was really a genius when it came to working on anything, cars or any kind of equipment. I guess Dan passed away, I think, last Tuesday. So unfortunately, we never got a chance to talk to Dan on the show. I always wanted to talk to him. One of the things I remember was he was friends with Arnold Schwarzenegger, because I remember with some of Jerry Branham's stories, he talked about Dan Howard being a manager at Gold's Gym back in the day. Dan Howard was one of the judges that was chosen to judge the 1980 Mr. Olympia contest. I think the reason why Paul Graham, who was the promoter of the 1980 Olympia, chose Dan Howard to judge the Olympia was because he was friends with Arnold. And I think Paul Graham, back in the day, the promoters could pick the judges, which was one of the problems with both the 1980 and 1981 Olympia. Although in 81, Roger Schwab was the head judge, and he did try to pick the best selection of judges. But anyways, in 1980, they were still leaving it up to the promoters to pick the judges. And so, of course, Paul Graham wanted Arnold to win, so he picked judges that were friends with Arnold. and pretty much all of them gave Arnold perfect scores. I got the score sheets actually in front of me right now. And in the first round, Albert Busack was a good friend of Arnold. Brendan Ryan from Australia, I guess, was a big fan of Arnold. Mike Walczak was a friend of Arnold. Mitz Kuishama from Hawaii, he was a friend of Arnold's. Reg Park, of course, was. So the only two who weren't on board were Jacques Bloomhart and Dan Howard. And I think Arnold asked Dan after the contest how he did, and Dan told him he shouldn't have gone in the contest and that he didn't put him in first. And I heard Boyer actually confirm this when I talked to him the other day. He said Arnold never talked to Dan again. So he really didn't place Arnold that low. He gave him a 19, a 20, and then the third round he gave him a 19. So he did not give him perfect scores like a lot of the other judges did. And Jacques Bloomhart, as I mentioned, from Belgium, was the other one who marked Arnold down. He gave Arnold 18, 18, and 19. But then at the end, when they could give a one for the person they thought should win the contest after the pose down, all five of those previous judges all gave Arnold a one, but Jacques Bloomhart and Dan Howard gave Chris Dickerson a one. So Dan did stand up for himself, and he did judge the way he thought it should be judged. So anyways, Dan Howard has passed away, so rest in peace, Dan Howard, and all the best to his family and friends. I guess Boyer didn't even get a chance to talk to him. I think he said that Dan suffered a stroke years ago, and he got over it, but it did affect his speech, and he couldn't talk as well. So because of that, he kind of isolated himself, and he didn't want to talk to any friends or anything. So a lot of people who knew Dan didn't get a chance to talk to him. So that's unfortunate. But hopefully we will be able to get Boyer and Roy Callender. And I also tried reaching out to Danny Padilla, but Danny never got back to me. I know Danny doesn't like to do interviews, but that would have been real fun to get all three of those. But if we can at least get Boyer and Roy together, that would be awesome. So keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully we can make that happen. I think I mentioned this last week, my bodybuilding history series, which is on my YouTube channel, which is under my name, John Hansen. Last week we did the 66 Mr. Olympia, which was Larry Scott's second win. We also did the 69 NABBA Universe, which was Arnold's second professional win. And that was a great contest because Boyer Coe won the amateur that year. Arnold won the professional. And Arnold beat out Dennis Tinerino and Serge Dubray. And Boyer beat out Jim Haislop, who won the tall class, and Franco, who won the short class. And he also beat out Roy Callender and Albert Beckles in his class. So great, great event. So I covered both of those shows in detail. So check out my YouTube channel. This coming week, look for the 67 Olympia, which will be Sergio's first Olympia win. I'm going to do that one. I'm also going to do the 68 NABBA Universe, which was Arnold's first professional win. And since I'm doing that one, I'm also going to do the 68 IFBB Universe, which was, I think, 1 week later, which was in Miami, where Arnold lost to Frank Zane. So I'm going to do both of those. All right. And then it was weird yesterday. It was Franco's birthday. Of course, Franco passed away last August. So it's been almost a year since Franco's passed away. So that was kind of eerie that it was Franco's birthday. I saw that pop up on Facebook. And unfortunately, Franco is no longer with us. That was kind of weird. What else is going on? I don't think I mentioned the Tampa Pro. I went to the Tampa Pro last week, which is out here in Tampa. And Lee Labrada's son, Hunter Labrada, won that contest. So that was pretty wild seeing that. I was there at the show, of course, because it was right out here in Tampa where I live. And Hunter Labrada's got a physique that's very, very similar to his dad. Same arm, same triceps, same legs, but he's just bigger. He's 5'9". And I think he was 245, 250, somewhere around there. So much, much bigger version of Lee. So Hunter has got a great future in the sport. He seems like a really nice young man. And he is now qualified for the Olympia because he won the Tampa Pro. And we also just found out this week that the New York Pro, which used to be called the Night of the Champions, Steve Weinberger produces that show. It's usually held in May, but of course they delayed it because of the COVID-19, the coronavirus. So it was supposed to be held in September, next month. But New York is being very, very strict, and they're not allowing anybody to come into New York, especially from these hotbed states like Florida. So anybody who comes in from any hotbed state, which is almost every state in the country, they're making everybody quarantine themselves for 2 weeks. So obviously that's not going to work for a bodybuilding contest where you got people coming in from all over. So they, instead of canceling it, they are going to hold it out here in Tampa again. So now we got two pro shows coming to Tampa, the one last week, and then we got this one coming up, which will be September 5th. So I will be at that one also. I'm going to cover that for RX Muscle. Actually, I'm having my hernia surgery that week, but hopefully I'll be okay and I'll be able to cover it. All right, let's get to some emails, because I got a lot of emails from the Earl Menard interview, which a lot of people loved, and I loved it too, because it was great to talk to Earl, 84 years old. He was so full of energy. He had a great memory, remembered a lot of great stories. So that was really an awesome interview. Earl is, of course, the only living bodybuilder left from the very first Mr. Olympia, because Larry Scott, who won the show, passed away, and Harold Poole also passed away almost 10 years ago. So at least we have Earl Menard still with us. So it was a real honor to talk to him. Keith Brown sent me an email, and if you guys want to email me, you can do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com. If you have any comments on the show or any suggestions, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail. Keith Brown said, "Hi, John, I just listened to your interview with Earl Menard, and I really enjoyed it. What a class act, a true gentleman. That's what I love about your interviews with the past legends. All these great men from the past come off as true gentlemen. It's so refreshing. Keep up the great work, John." And then I did get a comment on my Apple podcast. So if you listen to our show on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, you can go to the page, the Bodybuilding Legends page, and you can rate our show. Please give us 5 stars if you like it. And you can also leave a comment. So PE teacher Jose Palacio on August 4th, just this last week, said, "This is the most informative and, for me, motivating bodybuilding podcast. After 7 years of not training, I ran across this podcast and I decided to listen after seeing the pick on the podcast app," which is that group pick from taken from the 70 Olympia with Arnold and Franco and Frank Zane and Ricky Wayne and Dave Draper. It says, "This show reminds me of being a young lifter and buying my issues of Dan Lowry's Muscle Training Illustrated. I love hearing from and about the bodybuilders I used to read about. I listen to this podcast while I train. Thank you, John, for your podcast magazine every week." All right. Thank you, Jose. Thank you for those comments. And I got some comments on my Facebook page. Per Gunnar Olsen said, "Fantastic. The first time I did see Earl was in the movie The Deep. I was very impressed as a young kid. Thank you for doing the podcast with the bodybuilders from the golden age." Giles Thomas from MD, Muscular Development, said, "Look, show Dad Sheila Thomas." And Sheila Thomas said, "Wow, one of his old mates." So I guess I have to ask Giles. I guess his dad knew Earl Menard. Patrick Burke said, "I love what a great man, full of life. I stopped my workday, listened to the whole thing. I can't say enough how refreshing it is to hear the old stars. Gentlemen and fun. Thanks a million." Let's see. Mark Childers said, "Awesome, John. What a legend." Jerry Scalise said, "I used to love watching Earl wrestle back in the day when I was a kid." Walter van de Braden said, "I saw Earl also wrestling in Antwerp, Belgium, and I saw him competing in the different bodybuilding contests." Toma Davi said, "Great bodybuilder and actor, very humble as well. Fellow actors and friends all have wonderful things to say about this wonderful man." And then I did get a comment from Richard Baldwin. Our friend Richard Baldwin said, "Another fantastic interview with a great champion of the golden age. I love finally getting back to hear great guys like Earl Menard talking about their careers. It brings back great memories of anxiously waiting every month to read the magazines about the latest contest winners and their training and nutrition regimens. Now we get to hear them talk about those days themselves, thanks to you. I'm so old that I've met a lot of the champs in person myself, but you interview many like Earl that I would not otherwise have ever heard talk about those exciting times. Keep up the great work, my friend." And then on my Bodybuilding Legends Show page on Facebook, I got another couple comments. Dominique Franzovic said, "Cool." And Gareth Hudson said, "What a great interview. So knowledgeable, and he speaks with so much love for the sport, even at his advanced age." And then I did put the Earl Menard video up on YouTube, and I got quite a few comments there, so I want to read a few of those. The Iron Force said, "If it isn't evident enough, this man is quite full of life and sharp for his age. I never would have believed he's in his 80s. Great stories. I loved hearing him name drop other legendary names." Sigular Rumus said, Earl is so engaging and still sharp as a tack. I love hearing stories of the earlier bodybuilders. Great job as usual, John. Stefano said, I can't believe he is 84. It must be that Barbados water he's still drinking. I got to get me some. Ronan said, another great interview, John. The only bodybuilding podcast I ever listened to. No shouting and swearing and clickbait. Just a reminder of everything positive about bodybuilding. This one said, I always liked Earl, except when he killed Kevin, Robert Tessier, in the movie The Deep. I love these interviews. Keep them coming. Ronan said, again, it's so enjoyable. I just watched it again. Earl is such an engaging, entertaining guy. As always, great job interviewing, John. The Spritz said, amazing. I've seen photos of him in my old 1970s collection of Muscle Builder magazine. Golden Era Forever said, John, you are a great interviewer, and Earl is one of those older guys that inspires me. He had a great physique for his 50s and now. Great to see these older guys in an interview. I look forward to many more. Lone Mapper said, great guy. I remember him in the magazines. Great physique. Glad to see him doing so well. Alan said that was a good interview. Nick said, another great interview. I have to say this was one of the most enjoyable bodybuilding interviews I've ever watched. Keep up the awesome content. Darren said, Earl is such an amazing guy. Best old school podcast I've watched, John. And Miles said, without a doubt, the best thing on YouTube, Earl Maynard, a true legend, and John is brilliant. Tony said, another fantastic interview, and what a true, true Bonjin and fantastic ambassador. I think that means from Jamaica. Anthony said, thanks, John. I didn't know about Earl. Brilliant content. James said, the Duke of Earl looked to be a very light but aesthetic type of bodybuilder. He must be completely appalled by the current state of affairs in professional bodybuilding. And Anabolic said, I'm enjoying these interviews with these old school bodybuilders. Is there any reason why you don't delve into steroids that were used back then? I think it would be quite educational to know what they were using, especially for the young guys these days who are abusing obscene amounts. And I did respond to him and I said, I don't ask these guys about that because I don't want them to feel uncomfortable, but I basically just want to talk about their careers with these interviews. But if people want to talk about the anabolics, I don't mind talking to them about them. Boyer Co. was pretty open about it. Mike Quinn was, of course. Who else? We had a couple of people who were pretty open about what they took. Phil Williams, I asked him about it, and he was telling me what they took back in his day. Yeah, I don't really, that's not the purpose of the show. But again, I'm not hiding from it, just that it makes some people feel uncomfortable. And I found that a lot of bodybuilders will downplay how much they used because they don't want people thinking that their physiques are just from the drugs, which I can understand. Especially people that don't understand bodybuilding, they're going to misunderstand it and they're going to put too much emphasis on it. So, all right. So that is it for our emails. Again, if you guys want to email me, just do it at naturalolympia@gmail.com. So let's get to our interview here with Ed Connors, and he is joined by Rich Gaspari and Jay Cutler. The audio was a little screwed up. I think we had some internet interference coming from one of the guys. So hopefully you guys can understand this. I apologize for that, but you're going to enjoy the interview nonetheless. Here we go.
All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We have a very special show this week. We have three guests. Our first guest is Ed Connors, one of the owners of Gold's Gym. Ed is back on the show again to talk to some of the house guests that he helped. And we have Rich Gaspari joining us again. Rich is calling in from New Jersey. Rich was one of the people that Ed helped when he was younger. And welcome into the show for the very first time, Jay Cutler, four-time Mr. Olympia. Jay was also one of the guys that Ed helped when he was younger. So welcome to the show, guys.
Good to be here.
Awesome, man.
All right, Jay, let's start with you since I've never talked to you on the show before. Tell us the first time you met Ed. How old were you?
The first time I met Ed Connors was actually in June of 1993.
Okay.
I actually went out to California to watch the Mr. USA. I was staying out in LA for the first time, and I went to Gold's Gym, and that's when, you know, I was approached by Ed, and he said, hey, I own the gym. And I had heard a little bit about Ed through Chris Aceto, and of course, he was kind of a legendary guy with Gold's Gym. So he introduced himself, and I think he kind of told the story before where, you know, he was like asking me where I was staying, and I was staying quite a distance from Gold's Gym. I actually walked to the gym, And he said, man, I got to get you out of there. And he put me at his house for the first time, like immediately that day. And we spent some time that week going to dinner and just meeting each other. And, you know, the rest is kind of history.
And you knew about Ed from Chris Aceto, you said, Jay?
Yeah, Chris Aceto worked out there running the nutrition side at Gold's Gym. And he had told me how Ed Connors was a big reason a lot of these guys were able to come out and train. And I kind of knew who Ed was as soon as he came up and introduced himself. I had already heard so much about him. And obviously, he made a huge impact on my career from then forward.
Yeah. Now, Ed, did you know who Jay was when you saw him? Did you know from Chris?
I might have known. No, I don't know. I'm sure I saw that he had a, you know, incredible potential or great physique. He might have won a Gold's Classic bodybuilding contest, and maybe I saw him in the NPC newsletters. A lot of our Gold's gyms used to have bodybuilding contests as to help promote their gym, and a lot of them would then send their winners out to Venice to be photographed.
Okay.
So yeah. I don't know, Jay, had you won any contests up to that point?
I won the team nationals like literally a month prior to that.
Oh, okay.
I may have been aware of that. The way that there was such a lag time with the magazines, that I probably wasn't aware of that.
So you were just basically going by Jay's potential from what you saw, right, Ed?
Yeah, people often ask me, how do you know, Ed? And I just look at somebody and I know. To me, it's obvious.
Hey, Rich, let's go over to you. I know Ed, I think, saw you at Nationals when you took fifth place. So tell me the first time that you met Ed.
It was 83 Nationals, so it was in San Jose. I competed as a heavyweight. I just won the Junior Nationals. I was just 20 years old, and I went into that show, and I went into heavyweight class. It was a really tough class because that year, Bob Parris won the class. Rory Littermeyer came in second. Mike Christian came in third.
And then always fourth.
Matt Mendenhall came in fourth, and I came in fifth.
Yeah.
But I was an unknown. No one ever heard of me. I was some Jersey kid, you know, getting the top five in the Nationals. And I guess Ed just met me, you know, he just met me at the show. And he goes, you look great. He goes, you should go down a class into the light heavyweights. You're not tall enough to go against those guys. And would you consider moving to California? I have a gym that I'm opening up in the valley in Reseda. And for me, it was like a dream to get to move to California because I knew Reseda was near, you know, where Weider was, Woodland Hills. So for me, it was like, oh, I get to go out to California.
Yeah, the Mecca.
And so I took, you know, I took the job and moved out there, you know, to get ready for the Nationals as a light heavyweight.
Jay, when you were approached by Ed, he told you to stay at his house, right? The next time you came out there?
Yeah, you know, he put me up at his house, his beach house, and it was amazing. Like, you know, for a kid coming from Massachusetts, I came from a super small town. Like, to be staying at a house on the ocean in Venice Beach, my dream was to go to California. Remember, I kind of showed up in California on a technicality. Like, they had a misprint in the Boston Globe newspaper for round trip tickets for $99 at the time. And I was, I had no money. I was working at a golf course doing maintenance at the time. And I just competed at the team nationals. Chris Aceto was going out because he was helping Michael Francois for that USA that year, which was really stacked up. I mean, Chris Cormier ended up winning. So I went there kind of like with empty pockets. And that's why I was staying at such a terrible hotel. I think it was way on Lincoln near the 10 freeway. And I mean, I remember walking to Gold's and it took me like over an hour to walk Gold's Gym.
Wow.
And remember, wasn't really transportation then. Like, I mean, you could have taken a taxi, but I wouldn't even spend the money on a taxi. That's how budgeted this trip was. So when Ed offered his house to us at no cost, it was like amazing to us. Plus, you know, we got to look out right on Venice Boardwalk and, you know, that house, I know, Ed, that house was worth a lot of money when you sold it, and it's worth a lot more now. But it was a great experience, and it was very welcoming for him to do that for us.
Okay.
Same thing with me. Like when I went out there, and he invited me to that house, that beach house, I thought it was incredible. You can walk right to Gold's Gym Venice.
Yeah.
And I was just, oh my God, I'm in freaking heaven here. I can go to the gym, you know. And Ed goes, here's the keys. He was gone. I said, you gave me this beautiful house here, you know, in Venice.
Yeah. Rich, you were at my first house, though, which was on a walk street in Venice, right?
Yes.
And Jay stayed at my last house, which is right on the boardwalk, which was pretty spectacular. I mean, I own three homes and one apartment in Venice. So over the years, I had two or three houses at times. Rich, who was there when you were there? Was Barry DeMay or Matt Mendenhall there?
Matt Mendenhall, Barry DeMay. You introduced me to the wrestler.
Jim Hellwig, El Warrior.
Yeah, you go, here's a guy who's trying to be a bodybuilder, the ultimate warrior.
John, I don't know. Rich ended up working at the gym in Reseda, which was the manager there was Steve Borden. He's the one that became Sting.
Okay.
The wrestler Sting, and he tag teamed with Jim Hellwig, who became the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, okay.
I actually bought them their first makeup kits at a costume store, which was just down the street from the motel that Jay stayed at. Of course, now it's that street's got some expensive motels on it, but the costume store is still there. But a lot of people don't realize that Hellwig and Sting were tag team partners, and they each had makeup, which they took each their separate ways when they split up.
So, Rick, let me go back to you. When you stayed at this house and you stayed with, you said, Barry DeMay and Matt Mendenhall, how did that work out? You guys all had separate bedrooms?
They weren't there at the same time when I was in the house. I was alone in the house.
Oh, okay.
But they were there. I mean, I think Matt was already living in California.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Matt Mendenhall.
Right.
My first house was a duplex, Rich, and I don't know if I owned both sides or when you were there. Did you stay on one side that I was in?
Yes, because you were on the other side. You gave me the keys, so I think it was a duplex. So
yeah, okay. I when I bought it, I only bought half the duplex, and then over time I bought the other side. So a lot of my house guests would stay there. And back in those days, I was still working full-time as an architect. I didn't quit working as an architect until 85, so I wouldn't see a lot of my house guests, of course, during the day.
Okay.
They would entertain each other. And Jay, who do you remember at my house during the times you were there?
You know, you had Louie living in the basement. Remember, you just built the bottom apartment in that house at the time. But, you know, Mike Matarazzo came through when I was there.
Right.
When I first came on, Lee was just making his entry into the USA. And I remember you telling me, because I was 19, he had turned 20. Or 21 at your house, and you were raving about him, and I saw him in the gym, and I always said that was the freakiest bodybuilder I ever seen. I mean, there's so many guys that came through there. A lot of up and coming people too. A lot of the foreign guys, which was hard to communicate with some of these guys. I think Akam Albrecht came through when I was there, but we had our own bedrooms. I mean, Ed was very particular about how we kept the towels and, you know, washing up after ourselves. And, you know, we would all kind of like have our own grocery refrigerator. But what I really learned, what I liked about working around other people is I was still rather young, and I had only, you guys got to remember, like, this is magazine. You only learn from the magazines. I mean, I read Rich's articles when I started training in 91, like him and Lee Haney were like the biggest features in all the magazines that I read. And then here we are, 1993. So you only learn really from interaction with people, the extra things, especially in California. Like, people knew a lot more than the East Coast. So when we had house guests coming from foreign countries or different places, you know, you bounced ideas, but we had our own sections in the refrigerator where we would have our own food. And one thing, you know, I was very particular about my diet, and I would eat my six meals a day. And some of the guys would eat out. I focused on just cooking my own food every day.
Yeah. Did you work out with a lot of the guys that you were staying with, Jay?
I did get to train with everyone. And I think Ed kind of brought that. I was one of the people that if it was a leg day and someone was doing back, I was eager to do anything. You know, it's funny, when you walk in Gold's Gym, it doesn't matter what you train. It was like every day was so exciting. And going to the gym, it was, I mean, Rich will tell you, probably I remember when he said he managed the gym or whatever, there was a lot of famous people coming in there. But Gold's Venice was, that was like the heyday. So you had actors, athletes, and bodybuilders. And I mean, the walking through the door every minute, it seemed like there was like a who's who. And you never wanted to leave. I mean, it was one of those places where You know, today I sell pre-workout to try to keep people working out for hours on end. You were just cranked up by the motivation and the adrenaline just walking in Gold's Gym and training there.
Yeah.
Like it was exciting every day. And that's, so I didn't care what I was training. And I put on, I remember when I went back later in 93 and I stayed for a month and I put on, I think, 30 pounds just staying at Ed Connor's house.
Rich was in the Gold's Gym in Reseda, and well, Gary Stridham worked for me in one of my gyms in Texas, and then he came out to LA. He was a house guest at that same house, but Lee Haney trained at that gym. Joe Weider had his offices in Woodland Hills, and you know, it was great for them to be in the Valley rather than Venice. Joe didn't like going to Venice for whatever reason, but so Rich was up there with actually quite a lot of good athletes. Bertel Fox trained there, right, Rich?
Bertel Fox, Albert Beckles, Corey Everson, Jeff Everson, Fred Hatfield, Sting, Lee Haney, Hulk Hogan would be there occasionally. So there was a lot of big guys that trained in the Reseda gym. Beretta, what's his name? Beretta, he was the actor training there. Robert Blake, he was always a regular there.
Right, right.
Actually, he was our landlord in Santa Monica when Pete and Tim and I bought Gold's Gym. He was a very difficult landlord, and that was one of the reasons we moved the gym from Santa Monica to Venice. And I thought he was loyal to Vince Gironda, and was actually trying to, you know, shut down our gym. So it's interesting, Rich. I've forgotten that he had trained at Don Peters. The gym I bought in the Valley was formerly owned by Don Peters.
Yeah.
And, I made it a Gold's Gym. It was my third gym, I think.
Now, Rich, when you went out there to stay at the house, did you stay in California the whole time, or did you go back home?
I wasn't there. Well, I stayed there in his house for a little while because I had to find a place to live.
Right.
And then Ed set me up with another guy who was going to manage the gym named Dave Zachary, who also managed the gym. I'm still friends with him today, but you know, he was my roommate. So we got a place together and I lived in Tarzana. So eventually from his house, I went to Tarzana. Ed was also very nice to give me one of his cars. Wow. It was a small car. He gave me a little car. I forgot what kind of car that was, Ed, but you gave me a car.
I've had so many, I can't remember.
But he gave me the car for a little while, and then I had to save up enough money to buy a car because when I worked at the gym, I would take my bike to go to the gym in Reseda, and I had the 5 a.m. Shift. And that shift, another guy was there, was Jake, you know, Body by Jake. Jake Steinfeld trained at the Gold's Gym in Reseda. So he was right there at the door, so I couldn't be a minute late because he wanted to get into the gym and train because he trained his clients.
And then how long was it till you moved out there from the first time Ed had you till you moved out?
I think I stayed like a month in Venice. Okay. and then I found a place, you know, then I said I eventually found a place.
Okay.
And then I lived there for over a year.
Okay.
In Tarzana.
When you trained with Lee.
When I trained with Lee Haney.
Okay.
Most of the guys needed at least 2 weeks to look around to find a place to live. I mean, that's the benefit, I guess, of you know, staying in my place is that they weren't wasting money on a hotel or eating out, and they could take that time to find an apartment. Of course, and the money they saved would have been the first month rent and a deposit.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's gotten so expensive to live in LA now that it's ridiculous. You know, a one-bedroom apartment is easily $2,500 a month.
Yeah. And Ed, you would also help, like, introduce people, right? You would introduce them to Weider or like, if they wanted to get into pro wrestling, you would make the connections for that, too, right?
Oh, right. No, I'd see somebody like, you know, well, like Lee Priest. I took Polaroids of him the first day I met him. I FedEx him to Joe Weider, and on 2 days later we were having lunch with Joe, and Joe offered him a contract. But you know, things are a little slow out at Weiderland, and It took 5 months. So Lee stayed with me for his first 5 months in America. And there were two other guys at the house. Louis was at the house then. Mm-hmm. And another football player that from one of my high schools near one of my gyms in East L.A.
Jay, when you first came out, didn't Ed introduce you to Weider also?
You know, in 95, I actually came back and competed at a show called the Tournament of Champions. And, you know, I remember everyone telling me, hey, we need to get face-to-face with Joe Weider. And I wasn't a pro. I was chasing still a qualification show before I went for my pro card in 96. But, you know, I competed and won that show on a Saturday. And I had spent time with Ed. You know, we flew in, I think, a Friday. And we spent time. And I had photo shoots lined up all week. I was shooting at Gold's Gym. He helped me line me up with more photography. And then, like, it was a big deal. They were trying to get Joe Weider to make time to see me. And by the time the end of the week rolled around, almost a week after the show, I finally got that face-to-face meeting. And pretty much it was the story that you hear all the time. I walked in Joe's office and he literally said, I want to sign you to a contract. And a lot of that was Ed, you know, calling him and saying, hey, I have this guy. He has a lot of potential. He's not a pro, but he has a ton of potential. And next thing you know, Joe offered me a deal, and that was because of my relationship with Ed.
Joe would often ask me how I knew somebody was going to turn pro. Like, I took him Dennis Newman or Mike Francois or you know, he wouldn't believe me a lot of the times, and then he lost getting them at a lower price. But, yeah, I mean, I said, Joe, if you'd come down to Venice, you'd see, you know, it's obvious.
Yeah, I remember those pictures from that Tournament of Champions, Jay, because I think I saw an Ironman maybe, and remember you had your arms held up when you won the overall trophy, and I was like, who the hell is this guy? But I saw the legs were unbelievable.
Yeah, I had just turned 22 there, and you know, I remember talking with Ed, and the funny thing I want to say about Ed is, like, you know, Rich moved out there, he you know, ended up working in the gyms, and I think that atmosphere was ideal for him, but Ed never pushed me to really move out to California, to Venice. I think he saw my lifestyle as a little different. Mm-hmm. And I eventually moved out to Orange County later in my career, but he never pushed me, hey, I think this is the place for you. And I think, you know, me popping in and out, but I know we talked about, hey, what would potentially be a great show for me that I would get notoriety, because if I competed in the East Coast, we weren't covered in the magazines back then. So I had to go to where the magazines were. And I'm sure that's why Rich, like, went from Jersey out there, because the publicity was much greater. And I think maybe he was looking to learn some things or motivation. But for me, I was pretty self-motivated. And I know that was kind of a hotbed in California in those early 90s. I think it was the end of the era. I think Rich lived in the ideal era of bodybuilding. And just by listening to what he says on this, it helps me recall, like, reading the magazines coming up as a kid. And I'm, like, a little jealous, to be honest. I didn't see all, like, a lot of these bodybuilding stars and see these wrestlers come about. Like, there was probably so much more knowledge thrown around, because by the time I landed in Venice and I got to train there on and off, people were a little standoffish, to be honest. Like, people, other than the people staying at Ed's house, like, people weren't welcoming to say, hey, you know, what are you doing? How can I help you? And I remember that was one of the things that I said, if I ever become someone in the business, like, I want to be, like, welcoming to people. And because I know how it is coming in and having a dream and a vision, but really not sure how to get there. So I appreciate that Ed never pushed that. But at the same time, you know, I knew that the publicity was in California, and it was that way. I don't think necessarily today. Right. I think social media allows us to be anywhere we are. As you see, we have three of the top five Mr. Olympia competitors that live overseas. So it's all swung in a different direction. But man, that Gold's Gym Venice, it was something else back in those heydays.
John, I'm a big talk about what Jay just said. I'm a big believer that you need to love where you live.
Yeah.
So I, you know, a lot of people, you know, Venice is not for everybody. I tell people you have to be a Venetian. Like, I remember Eddie Robinson, was a house guest at 19, and you know, he's a Floridian. He likes the hot, humid weather, likes the fish. You know, it's just a different style. But, also talk about what Jay mentioned just now, you know, you remember Arnold Schwarzenegger had to go from Graz, Austria to Venice, California to get a workout 45, 50 years ago. That's because that was the gym. And for about, I would say, two decades, Gold's Gym Venice was sort of, you know, the ultimate one gym fits all. And now, of course, it's all over the place. There are, you know, five different kinds of gyms, and maybe more after the pandemic. So there was a period in there where in the 80s and early 90s where Gold's Gym was it. And of course, there was no social media, so you needed to get publicity. And I had, you know, the Gold Gym name painted over the mirror, so no matter where somebody was photographed, you knew where they were. Yeah. And they would also be wearing our clothing. We were actually a clothing company masquerading as a gym chain in that time frame. We were doing more business with clothing than we were, you know, in licensing the gyms. Hmm.
And that's something, you know, being a bodybuilder, it used to give us a lot of the clothes to wear.
Right.
You know, the Gold's Gym outfits, I had so many Gold's Gym shirts to wear. And, you know, what you said, Jay, is me going out there, I was that young, like you, like an East Coast kid, moving to California, I was very motivated. You know, I could train in a little crappy gym in New Jersey, and, you know, that's where I trained for a lot of my Olympias. But I wanted to go to California to prove a point that I can go to California and still become a champion against all the other champions that were there. So I was on a mission when I moved to California. I was going there to, like, conquer, you know. So I was a little bit crazy in my time when I was there.
John Rich brings up a very good point. I think the two most common phrases I heard from house guests were, one, oh, they're not as big as I thought they would be, or two, they don't train any harder than I do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you see these people in the magazines, I think they almost look superhuman, or, you know, they're like cartoon characters or action figures. But when you're out there in the gym with them, then suddenly you realize, well, yeah, I'm, you know, they're human just like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you go down to the firehouse, you see how they eat, you know, what they do. And, you know, you begin to think, well, God, maybe I could be one of them.
Yeah.
So that's, I think just being in Venice and seeing that was an eye opener to a lot of the people that I knew that came out.
Yeah.
And my house was sort of a guru house. I mean, there were no gurus back in the 80s and early 90s. Now, of course, everybody's a guru, but, back then, you know, as Jay or Rich just said, a lot of the guys weren't really open in the gym. But if you're all living under the same roof, you really can't hide much.
Yeah.
It's what you're doing. So I think it was an education for a lot of the guys, and it was, you know, valuable. And Rich, you moved in with Lee Haney, right?
Yeah. At the end, when I lived there, eventually, because I was preparing for the show, I stopped managing the gym and I focused on just preparing for the show. And I was doing double sessions of training, and I was actually going to move back to New Jersey, and Lee Haney goes, "No, you're going to move with me." Because I, you know, we were such good training partners together. He goes, "You're going to help me win the Olympia," and that's what I did. We trained like animals, and, you know, we trained there. We go to Venice on the weekends. It was just a great time being there. I made other friends, like, you know, I was a kid. I was like Jay's age. I just turned 20. I met guys like Dennis Tenorino, who back then was like a big, he was just retired, but he was a guy, because he was like an East Coast guy.
Yeah.
He was very good with me. It's like almost like he was like my dad, that I didn't make the wrong moves, because I think he did some things when he was younger and he wanted to keep me away from that. But California was a real experience, especially to live there and live in, you know, between Venice and the Valley.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't know you knew Dennis Tenorino. I always liked Dennis. I heard he was a great guy.
Yeah, he was the nicest guy, you know, very nice, very, you know, hey, I need you to take you here, I'm going to take you there. I mean, he was a spiritual guy, because he went through a lot of things that he did that were not really that nice, you know, when he was younger.
Right.
So he kind of changed. So he saw me there and he goes, you know, you can really be tempted by a lot of stuff going on here. So I want to, you know, I just want to make sure you stay away from that stuff.
Yeah. Hey, what year did you finally move to California from Massachusetts?
Me?
Yeah. Okay. 99, I moved.
99? Okay.
99, yeah. But I just want to say one thing. I asked Chris Estino who the hardest trainer he ever saw was, and guess who he told me?
Rich Gaspari.
Rich Gaspari. Yeah. Ed, you probably didn't know that because you weren't watching the guys work out as much in the gym. But
no, I would hear that. I mean, I would, you know, that's a. I think I knew more about what was going on in the gym than my two partners because, you know, I would take you guys out to dinner, right? I'd say who wants to go eat, and I'd grab whoever at the house. We'd go eat somewhere, and I'd hear all about what was going on in the gyms. So I. You know, I knew what equipment was good, the latest gossip. I mean, it really, it was an education. You guys taught me a lot.
Hey, Rich, I wanted me to ask you how you liked doing the managing job at the gym when you were a manager.
I mean, I was more focused in competing, so I wasn't the best of managers because, Ed's here now listening. But, you know, I would train on my shift and then, the guy, Dave, who was my head manager, he said, you can't train while you're there. And so I was there for a purpose to, you know, compete and win the nationals and then win the Mr. Universe. So, I started, like I said, okay, I'll train after. But then with Lee Haney, I was doing these double sessions that I said, well, I got to work. He goes, well, you can't work no more. We're training for the show. So I had a couple people that I trained. I actually did pretty well personal training in the Valley, and I was a hustler, so I made money, and I made enough money doing the personal training to get by and buy my food and not have to work, you know, 10 hours a day at the gym. So I continually lived there, and then, you know, Lee offered me his house, which, you know, two bodybuilders dieting in a little apartment with his wife, that was like a really hard thing.
But Rich, you turned pro within less than 2 years, right? After I met you. So
I turned pro in a year.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I mean, I knew you weren't going to be working the gym very long. I really wasn't worried about your work ethic because I knew you were going to be pro right away. Yeah. There was no super heavyweight class back then. So, you know, to me, it was obvious if you dropped down a weight class, you'd win.
Yeah. So now when I dropped down to that light heavyweight, you know, I was able to win that the nationals and then win the, you know, the universe. Back then you had to win the universe to turn pro.
Yeah. When Ed suggested that to you, Rich, do you think that was a good idea or did you want to stay as a heavyweight?
Well, I won the junior nationals as a heavyweight, but then when I stood on stage at the nationals and going against, like I said, Rory Littlemyer, Mike Christian, I mean, they were so much taller and bigger than me. I went into the show at around 205.
Yeah.
Those guys were 230, you know, 225. So they were much heavier than me. And I just had to go down to 198. I did over-diet a little bit to get more, you know, to get ripped. I was like, I was 188 for the nationals and 192 for the universe. Cause I was afraid I wasn't going to make weight, but I, you know, went beyond losing weight to make weight.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, it's going to be a lot tougher for you to win because you're a shorter guy and, you know, you got a better chance. You know,
John, being an architect, I focus a lot on measurements and, you know, Rich, you're 5'8", right?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you just can't compete against guys who are 5'11" or 6 feet. Yeah.
You made the right decision because then, you know, I won as a light heavy.
Yeah.
And then a year later, I competed, you know, 215, 220, and I would have my weight to
as a
pro.
Hey, Jay, when you were going back and forth from Venice to Massachusetts, did you learn more and more each time you went out to California? Did you see, like, what you're going to have to compete against and what you're going to have to do in order to turn pro?
Yeah, you know what? You know, it's really hard for people watching this to comprehend unless they were in that era, but we have social media. So like you talk about when I remember the Olympia would take place and, you know, we wouldn't know for 2 months. I mean, I would be like, did anyone know who won the, you know, when are they going to come out the results? It was the magazine, you know, the magazine would, you know, they wouldn't come out until the magazine. So, for me, it was just, you know, I went back and forth, and I would get like insight on who's up and coming, who's doing the nationals, who's always like, oh, there's this guy that popped in, and I stayed in touch with the photographers like Herb Gell. Mm. And he would kind of give me insight on who was up and coming. And, of course, Ed also, we would talk, but you always learn as you progress. And what I knew is I never wanted to live in Venice. I'll be honest. I never wanted to live in Venice Beach.
Okay.
And if you ask me why, I felt like it was like everyone was looking for stardom there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
you did want to move to California, though, right there?
I did want to move because I felt like it was a better it would be a better relationship with Joe Weider and myself. But listen, I loved Massachusetts, and I had my way I did things, and mm-hmm. and I was kind of, you know, I'm kind of a creature of habit. But I realized, like, the time when I moved in 99, my career went through the roof. I mean, it really made a big difference for me, having facilities to train at that were better, a more positive thing. It was more accustomed with the warm weather. I could train all year. I wasn't trudging through the snow to go to the gym.
Yeah.
And you do learn more, and the publicity does help. I mean, I was able to do photos all year.
Jay, weren't you meeting people in the gym? You were guest posing, you know, 45 plus weekends a year, and a lot of those came from just interaction and Gold's in Venice, right?
Well, Ed always told me don't come to Gold's in a sweatshirt. He always used to tell me to wear a tank top and wear shorts. Don't wear a snowsuit. So I learned that, you know, you are always a walking business, and that's one thing. Meeting people, yes, it helped tremendously with my work.
John, I used to tell the guys, this isn't poetry reading. People want to see muscle. And you go to these trade shows and you see these guys all covered up and yeah. showing no personality. It's ridiculous, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Jay, when you were out there in that house, tell me a little bit more about what it was like to live with these guys. Cause I think that's pretty interesting. You guys are out there. Four of you all live in a house. You're training together. You're all bodybuilders. You're all competing.
You know, a lot of the times, listen, we weren't competing in the same show. It wasn't like Rich's situation where, you know, I mean, he wasn't even competing against Lee Haynes then when he lived with him, right?
No.
We were all striving to get somewhere. And I think, you know, it was a lot of camaraderie because we were kind of forced to, but I was never a college dorm guy. So living with a bunch of guys sometimes, I mean, coming down and waiting for someone to cook their chicken, and I had to get in. And then, you know, we went to the gym sometimes and trained together. And I think the same thing, Ed, I had a bicycle I used to ride to the gym. And I remember Ed telling me one day, you can't leave that bike outside like that. It was behind gates and everything. I said, I grew up in a place, we left our keys in the cars. No one stole anything. And the next morning I came out and the bike was gone. And I felt so terrible because Ed told me someone's going to steal that bike. And I'm like, there's no way they're going to climb over three walls to get it. And they stole it.
I lost six bikes in 28 years living in Venice.
Yeah, because he lived right in the alleyway. Right there. So like a lot of the homeless, and back then the homeless wasn't anything like it is now, but yeah. They would see the opportunity. They would just, I never imagined they'd steal stuff like that, but they did. But I think, you know, the biggest experience was, I just got to listen to the stories of the other guys who had met the other athletes and had learned certain things. And I think like Ed said, it was a guru house. So like we learned about stuff like we might not know, and that was so early in my career, and I worked, you know, pretty handily with Chris Aceto since I was a kid, so I knew a little bit about nutrition. But I watched guys grow week to week, and I saw all the different training methods that they did. And you know, back then it wasn't like it is today. They have all these different training theories, and I mean, I just went to the gym and trained my ass off. That was how it worked for me. And my workouts were 2 hours. I didn't spend 30, 40 minutes like I do today working out, or even when I was winning Mr. Olympia. I mean, my workouts were 40 minutes. I thought you had to train for 2 or 3 hours. So definitely my workouts were a lot lengthier then.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Jay and Rich, the whole world of nutrition and supplements was very primitive back then, right? I mean, it was not like now. There was no internet, so I mean, the internet's been a big disappointment in terms of all the hate and misinformation and negativity. But it was hard to, really hard to know a lot about nutrition, right? In that era,
it definitely was a lot harder. I mean, I don't know, like Jay is 10 years later, but for me, I was an avid book reader. I went to college. I took nutrition. I learned from other bodybuilders, like, how to diet for a competition. And I just experimented on my own. But yeah, there was no internet to try to learn how to, carb deplete and carb load and, what kind of macronutrients, you should eat. But I was very intrigued with that. And that for me was my advantage because I read a lot about, nutrition because I felt I had to try to be in the best condition than my other, competitors. But it was something that I just had to go out there and learn or talk to other bodybuilders on how to diet.
Yeah. Yeah. You make a good point with that, Rich, because, like you said, there was no internet. So if you wanted to find out about nutrition, you had to read books. Remember that Nutrition Almanac? That was like the back then where you could get all the calories and protein and carbs and stuff. And
when that was my Bible. That book was my Bible.
All right.
Rich, you weren't doing a lot of cardio back then, were you, Rich?
I didn't do any. When I competed as a pro, only at the end I started doing cardio. A lot of it was just through my diet and training. Twice a day training, 1 hour, whatever it was, and a lot of posing. But I didn't really do any cardio, and I was known for being the most ripped. And I said, "How much cardio do I?" Said, "I didn't do any cardio."
There were no bikes in the gym when we first bought it.
No.
Ed, when did Gold start having more cardio equipment in there? It's like you
said. The Mensur brothers. I used to see them riding bikes on Venice Beach, which I also enjoyed doing. That was my one favorite activity.
Right.
And of course, some days it rained, so. It must have been in the early 80s, probably 82 or 3 or 4, that I just said, why don't we buy some bikes? And we put them, because it's kind of a boring activity, I said, let's put them over the restrooms in the main room or the maintenance shed so people can look down and see what's going on in the gym. So we probably started with maybe a dozen bikes. And now the average gym has at least 100 pieces of cardio.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's probably as much as the weight training now, takes up as much space.
My first gym franchise cost, I spent $100,000 on equipment, and nowadays, of course, that would buy 20 treadmills.
That's crazy. So, Rich and Jay, what do you have to say about Ed, about what he did for your career, as far as seeing the potential you guys had and giving you the help that he did?
I've said it many times. I said if it wasn't for Ed, I don't know if I would have ever been pro because he gave me that opportunity, to move out to California. And I always say he's like, he was the nicest guy to, give me that opportunity and, and trust me. And, I always say thank you for that because it was something where it made my career. That's what I can say.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you would have went back from the 83 Nationals, went back to New Jersey, and just trained another year in New Jersey, who knows where your career would have went, right?
No, I had so many more opportunities living in California for that year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, as well as, all the people you met, including Lee Haney. And that was a lifetime training with him, right?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a great experience, as the stories.
How about you, Jay?
You know, Ed was... I considered Ed, now looking back, a marketing genius because he looked at his business and I think he loved bodybuilding. I think, I don't know if he ever, maybe he trained and wanted to be, he kind of lived vicarious through us, but, he knew that bringing us out there and what it would really do for the business, it was huge, right? It was free marketing and, like, he really made the opportunity for a lot of us. I think a lot of us would agree that if he never invited me back after I met him in that June of 93, he invited me back between Thanksgiving and Christmas of the end of 93. And I can honestly tell you that that's when I really made the decision to pursue bodybuilding as a career. I had won the team nationals and there was all this hype and, hey, you have potential and this and that. But when I got to train and day in and day out in Gold's Venice and knew I didn't have to leave within a week's time, I stayed for 30 days. I realized that's what my vision was for the future. And he was, you know, he was the reason that I was able to make that decision. And I couldn't afford anything at the time. I was just a broke bodybuilder for many years. And, you know, to have those connections and have someone that gave me the motivation, you know, it was a huge advantage for me. And, you know, I've always thanked him through my career. But when I reflect now and I tell all the stories about the beginning, because that's what people want to know is how you make your way to the top. Like Ed Connors is like, I can't believe how much, you know, it inspired me to be better.
Yeah. 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 And you really changed a lot of lives with your foresight and bringing all these people out. I mean, you really changed the scope of bodybuilding. How many champions we would have had if you stepped in and brought these guys out there.
Well, and they first helped make Gold's Gym the largest gym chain in the world in the Mecca of bodybuilding. It was mutual, but yeah. I enjoyed changing lives, and they, you know, it was a great experience.
Yeah, well, I think Jay made a good point too, or you made a good point, Ed, when you said that when you're only seeing the magazines, you don't see these guys in person, and then having the opportunity, like Rich and Jay did, to go out there and see what it's really like to see these bodybuilders in person, and then I think maybe they both started to believe, hey, I could do this too. These guys aren't training any heavier or harder than me, or they're not any bigger than me. I could do this too. I belong right up there. If they wouldn't have had that opportunity to go out there and live out there for a month or so, you know, they might have never felt that way.
Well, John, you make a good point. I think too many people don't dare to dream. Fortunately, more Americans than most other nationalities do, but you've got to pursue your dream. And, you know, you can always go back, but you don't want to get to age 30 and say, you know, what if?
Yeah. Well, I think thanks to you, you gave these guys a lot of people the opportunity to go out there and to see what was for them. And they took advantage of it. And then, like I said, it really changed a lot of people's lives.
Well, I'm still trying to do it. And I'm hoping I'll get back with Gold's Gym with a new owner. So we'll see what we can do.
Yeah. All right. All right, guys. Well, I want to thank you all for joining me on the Zoom call to talk about Ed Connors and his contribution. So thanks, Richard Spari, Jay Cutler, and again, thanks, Ed. Thanks for everything all you guys have done for the sport.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
All right.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Ed Connors and Jay Cutler and Rich Gaspari all for joining us on the podcast. I really appreciate those guys. I know they're all busy. I want to thank our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I also want to thank our Patreon donors. And if you guys are interested in being a Patreon donor and supporting the podcast, you can do it just by going on to the Bodybuilding Legends Show website. And in the upper right-hand corner, there is a link for Patreon. I do have some segment of this interview with Ed and Jay and Rich that I'm going to be sending our Patreon donors. So that's what I do for all those people who are donors to the show. I try to send them a little bit something extra each week, whether it's pictures or parts of the interview. So thank you guys for supporting the show. We will be back next week with another interview. Until then, I hope you guys are safe out there, stay healthy, and keep training hard. I hope your gyms are open, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.